outside the box of religious obligation lies a road less travelled, into the heart of the Father's affection. Slinging freedom all over the place, this is the God Journey.
Well, Kyle, it was 50 years ago today that I first met Sarah.
50 years.
That's how old we are, yeah.
I would say, do you want to make that singular and leave Sarah out of it, or what are your thoughts there?
No, we've traveled this road together. We've got to pay the price together. Yeah.
Got to pay the price together, huh?
Yeah, it was 3 weeks later till our first date. I just met her. She was across the table from me at a homecoming banquet on Valentine's Day. Back in college, we were both freshmen. I had a class with her, but we'd never talked. She was front row people, I was back row people. So,
okay.
I'd seen her before, but never met her. And met her. 3 weeks later, we went out. And the rest is history, man. We've had 50 years on this journey together. And, man, I don't know what life would have been like, where I would have ended up if I would have married any other human being on the planet. Mm-hmm. I can't even imagine. Sarah has been such a gift in so many ways. And our love has deepened over the years. Neither one of us are the same people we were when we met, or even when we got married. We are completely different people, but still more in love than ever, and more fitted to each other. That's, I guess that's what years of marriage and letting Jesus shape some stuff. And now a lot of it, we get to bear the fruit of our journey. It's not all been easy. There have been rough patches in that whole journey, but overall, we just kept changing to find room for the others. It's been a heck of a journey. I love that girl a lot. Well, I'm Wayne Jacobson.
And I'm Kyle Rice.
And this is the next edition of The God Journey, taping it here on Valentine's Day, which is appropriate, I guess, for when I met Sarah. And also got my cardiology appointment today. So that was weird, going to my heart doctor on Valentine's Day. And
you had your heart checked on Valentine's Day.
Every year now. You know, once they start putting in new parts, they want to look at them every year and just make sure everything's running the way it's supposed to. And everything still is. So I'm about 5 years out, I guess, a little over 5 years from that surgery. So,
the results are back and you still do have a heart.
I still have a heart, still beating. What about you? What are you doing for Valentine's Day?
So I met with some clients this morning, and then I actually found a mug that was, I thought, was very fitting for my wife. My wife loves to drink tea and coffee, and so that's kind of how she starts her morning. And I found this mug at one of the local shops, and I was just like, oh my gosh, this is totally Jess. And so I brought it back, and I wrote a nice note for her, and she pulled out the mug, and she's like, Kyle, I literally saw this mug and had my friend come and see this mug because it was exactly me. Hmm. And there was probably 60, 70 mugs in the store. And so to have her say that that was the one that she would have bought, that she loved it so much that she had her friend come over and take a look at it, was pretty fun. And then I'm making pizza for the girls tonight.
Fantastic. Boy, it's nice to get it right, huh? After what, 10 years of marriage or what? You nail a mug.
So we're almost 10 years. So it'll be 10 years in August this year.
Yeah, there you go.
But it's weird to think it, like now I'm almost able to say that I can think in the context of relational decades versus years, which is pretty weird to think about.
Maybe decade.
Decade. at the moment, decades. Yeah, so, I don't have the privilege of decades.
How wild is that?
It's been incredible. I would say very similar sentiment in the fact that I can't fathom the journey that I would be on or where I would be at or the type of person that I'd be if it wasn't for Jess. Yeah. I mean, and that's what I wrote in our letter was just, I mean, man, it's so incredible to think about what we've done together and the things that we've learned together. And even just the other day, I was going through a hard time and it was like one of those landmine areas that normally Jess would be pretty hesitant to dive into with me. And yet she had courage this time and stepped into it and was able to really encourage me out of just some negative thought stuff that I was wrestling with. And it was like, I didn't snap at her. She had the courage to step into it with me, and we were a lot closer when we got to the other side of it. And that would, I just sat at a couple days later after that experience, was like, wow, Lord, the subtle things that just grow and change and mold your life that you don't recognize until you hit a moment like that. And you're like, oh man, I had no idea that God was doing that kind of change in my life through the power of being in relationship with this other person.
Joy of two becoming one over time, over a long time. And we're still exploring that, Sarah and me. Got an email here from one of our friends on the podcast. He was listening to the one we did about, you know, being a safe place for people and navigating uncertainty and whatever, and shared some interesting stuff, as Mike often does. He says, what another person does with gaps seems to be the quickest, most efficient way to measure how safe they are for me. Gaps confront us on every level and situation in life. And I think that means, you know, places of uncertainty and where you don't have the answers and all that. So he says, so it does not matter whether it's religion or faith, politics, culture, profession, education, or emotions are involved. I think how someone navigates gaps tells me everything I know regarding how safe they are. Someone who has no room for gaps in how they walk through life is the easiest way for me to know they're not safe. With others, I listen to how they process the gaps and how they acknowledge them, and then listen to how they explain these gaps. The gaps they do not accept are just as significant as the ones they do. Perhaps the essential aspect of acknowledging gaps is the humility expressed while acknowledging them. I suppose the vital gaps I look for, it regards love. The people who invite gaps to grow in their lives because they know a love that fills those gaps is much better than they can fill them are the most beautiful and safe people to be with. Their openings become so large that there's room to step into those gaps with them, and love makes everything safe because we share our space with love, with a capital L.
Does Mike explain more about what he means by gaps?
No, he didn't really, not in this email.
Yeah.
I think he said, you know, those gaps where you haven't got it figured out, you don't know what, you know, and do you just bluff your way through those?
Yes.
You know, or do you make room for it? You know, I just don't know yet, and I'm kind of holding that. And he says, how people handle, which I guess is their own uncertainty.
Yeah.
If they handle it with grace and with love and with holding things loosely, then they'll be a safe person to talk to. If they ignore their own gaps, they're going to try and fix yours. It's going to be not the best relationship.
Well, and that just makes me think of, I'm trying to remember who said it. I can't remember if it was Brené Brown. I think it was Brené Brown, but where she's talking about how the way that you treat your own heart is eventually the way that you'll treat the hearts of those around you. So, for example, if you've got a gap, or you've got this place of uncertainty in your life, and if you're very critical, or you're forcing yourself into a false sense of security, or, you know, whatever it might be, like, that's eventually the way that you're going to treat the other hearts of people around you as well. And that, you know, thinking about that and watching the way that somebody would manage those spaces or those conflicts or those gaps in their life, I think that's a great indicator. I think that's a really intriguing indicator as well.
And on the compassion side, it would also be true, right? If people are treating you horribly, you can pretty well know that's how they're treating themselves. I mean, there's a real compassion that goes back to, oh my gosh, you're going to treat me that way? I can't imagine how you talk to yourself. I can't imagine.
Exactly. And especially even, and it goes going off the idea of proximity too. You know, if somebody is more of an extended, like either just somebody that you kind of offhandedly know, or an acquaintance, or, you know, somebody that you know at work, and they're willing to treat you that way. Like, imagine the way that they're treating the people that are in their inner circle, or the way that they're managing their own heart. It's just like, oh, there's that sense of almost heartbreak for them of, man, that must be a very hard way to live. That would be a very hard standard to abide by.
Yeah, and that's a really good way to step away from the pain other people are bringing at you, rather than getting all defensive and fighting it, is just to go, wow, that's what they live with. I think of people like that who are legalistic and always got to fight the legalist course. Man, they live with that God. That's the God that they've asserted for themselves. And so, as I've always said about Pharisee, misery loves company. If I got to live with that God, my goodness, you're going to do it too. And I got an interesting email this morning, and this is kind of in the aftermath of my trip to Nashville last weekend. I hung out with some folks there. That was funny. I go walking to the door, and a couple picks me up at the airport that I know well in Nashville. And so I had dinner with them, and they were going to take me over to the group I was going to be with for the weekend.
Yeah.
And I didn't know anything about him. It's a 26-year-old guy, single, invited me to come. I was going to be staying in his apartment. So we're walking up, we're driving on the way over there, and I said to the couple, I said, I think he's Asian. They said, really? And I said, yeah, he sounded kind of Asian on the phone. We open the door. He's a 6'5" black guy. And so I turned around. The people behind me said, I don't think he's Asian. anyone know what we were talking about? Dude, on the phone, man, you sounded Asian. But he and the group he meets with, a lot of them are immigrants from Nigeria from 10, 15 years ago, living now in the States. Very, man, industrious entrepreneurs. I mean, just working hard to make a way for themselves in our culture. I love them. And then on their journeys, trying to sort out, you know, they've been trying to do kind of church at the center of everything and trying to have this home group thing that's really reflective of the church. And we're kind of in some of those paradigms, a la Gene Edwards and some of that strain. And man, just so open to talk, explore. I'm not sure they loved everything I said or necessarily agree with it, but man, I had a great time. The guy I was staying with, he went on my 4 mile walks every day, and it just, they went so fast. We were just talking the whole, first night I got there, he's showing me to my room and he said, I got a million questions for you. I said, well, we can start now. He goes, no, I've got some work to do. I'll see you in the morning. So we started the next day, and yeah, Nate, I had a great time with Nate. And then some other folks from around came and joined us for the weekend in various places and ways. And great time, more barbecue than I probably should have had, but again, the heart's good, working good. So that's where they kept taking me. I kept going.
Was it good barbecue?
Yeah, it was. I tell you. It was all right. And I got this email this morning as a result of some of that travel. And then in the midst of that, Thursday morning, I woke up. This is actually Friday, early Friday morning. First night I was there. And I woke up with this cry on my heart, just the Spirit and the bride say come. And it just, man, it was just, and I was just sitting there just, my heart like calling. And then scriptures came to mind, like Song of Songs, my lover skipping over the mountains and running over the hills. And then I would just, and the Spirit and the bride say, come. And then, you know, the hills are dancing and the trees are clapping their hands because God is coming. God is coming to judge the earth. And it was the Spirit of the bride say, come. And then it was, you know, the winnowing, John the Baptist, the winnowing fork is in his hand. I just wrote a blog about it the next morning because it just really touched my heart. Just, it was all scripture. I didn't, you know, it was just things on my heart, praying it. I was up for about an hour, just really leaning into some really lovely space. And I know everybody who read that, most people think, well, you're talking about second coming, man, is the second coming close? And for me, it wasn't about second coming. It was about into this world, into my life, into the places that concern me. That cry of come, come. I was thinking about that guarding the threshold of your heart that we talked about. That, you know, if Jesus is standing there wanting to do something in my life that I haven't let him do yet or don't know he's about, come, come. And so it really wasn't second coming, though, you know, who knows? We might be close to that. But I put it out on the blog kind of to dog whistle the bride. Just any of you else feeling this, you know, and I had a lot of people go, man, I read your blog in tears and something in my heart called out with you. And I don't know, it was really touching. But this guy wrote me this morning, he said, what a journey we've been on over the last 7 to 8 years. This is a good friend of mine from back east. Your encouragement of living a life loved has slowly and painfully scraped the barnacles of religious obligations off my life. And there is such freedom. I used to struggle with wanting to have a purpose and trying to do the work of the Lord, whatever that means. Now I find myself at a daily crossroads of opportunities, never knowing for sure where the next engagement will come from. Family, friends, employees, customers, total strangers. The fields are white to harvest, but the laborers are few. Wow. I love that. I love that look about, there's lots of people out there trying to build ministries, but
yeah.
People right there at the moment of need or opportunity, being aware of it. He said, so while you have impacted me so much and my life has been changed as Jesus has spoken through you, I kind of get weirded out by you recounting how Jesus speaks to you and the bride's call and stuff. It's not that I don't believe you, but it just feels weird. At the heart of it, it might be that there are a few of those stubborn barnacles that have been yet to be scraped off, which prevents this ship from sailing into waters that you obviously enjoy. I pray and believe I see the leading of the Lord in my life, but I don't have the actual conversations with him. So I just live out my life, it seems, without the dramatic personal revelations and interactions that you and others seem to have. Maybe that is a gift I have not received, and maybe it is just lack of spiritual maturity. I do love where Jesus is leading, and I'm so thankful to be able to enter into others' lives. When I read your post, though, it was kind of unsettling for some reason, and I thought I'd just share it with you. And so we've had a bit of exchange after this, because if other people read that thinking, wow, God woke me up in the middle of the night and we had that exchange and didn't recognize that, you know, those were scriptures.
Yeah.
I was just recounting a prayer that was rising out of my heart at the moment. And so we had that little exchange going, man, the way God leads you is exactly the way God leads me. Man, I've been with this guy. I've watched the nudges in his heart. I see the lives he impacts in a broad way. Not, I mean, he's got a business, but it's beyond the business. He's involved in some of the inner city stuff where he lives. And he's just, he recognizes people in need and he's there to love them. And he's been through some really difficult church and family situations. And I just... So I said, you know, I think the nudges is, I think this whole idea of it, I have this ecstatic conversation with God in a vision. I mean, I've had a few visions in my life. I've had some dreams that had some meaning. But yeah, for the most part, it's just God nudging your way. And you're never certain in the middle of it. You always can look back better and go, wow, that was really a God thing. And so I got a chance to clarify that. And I didn't know if others were, you know, reading some of that stuff or if I've communicated that to other people. But I really wanted to let folks know the way God mostly leads us is more organic and natural than we dare to believe. It's not, I don't have conversation with God. So I described him to this guy as like over a year's time, I can talk about, you know, I've had these thoughts and questions and then God's kind of given me this insight over time. And so you could summarize that as, you know, I was asking God about this and he answered this, but that's over months and it's never, never an audible voice. I don't have conversations with God in that, hey, God, what about this? And I go, so what about this? And he says that. And it's not like that. It really is just holding space inside God for the questions and situations I'm in, having some insights and thoughts, giving some a try. Some are him, some are not. It's much more organic and real, I think, than a lot of people think in their heads because we've seen TV evangelists maybe for too long do weird stuff and people think that's the way it works. But where are those people today? They're just not there. That was a flash in the pan stuff. So at the end of his thing, he wrote me this today. This is the second exchange. God's ways are not twisted tangles of theological complexity. What has drawn me to you is that your consistent message of just relaxing and resting in God's love has yielded great peace in my heart. All the worries about falling short, not being prepared, not having the right words to say, and most of all, heaven forbid, that we were not faithful to someone in correcting their errors. These worries don't dominate my life anymore. What about just letting the love of God wash over our hearts, clear our minds, and let's leave the heavy lifting to the Father? It works so well.
That's awesome.
I love that.
As I was just listening to that email, and then as you were just talking about your experience and just that, it made me think of last week. Man, Wayne, it just felt like it was this ebb and flow of some heart challenges that were going on, some insecurities that I'm still working through. And yet, man, there and then there was these moments where God was just like through little subtle organic ways that the people who said them probably had no idea the meaning behind them in some regards. And yet those words came alive to me because the timing was right. The heart condition was right. And, you know, like going from a kind of a challenging, difficult conversation with my boss. And then literally I'm walking out the door and had a person just affirm the absolute opposite direction of what the conversation had just been and some of the negativity that was in that. And it's like, man, oh man, Lord, like, okay, like I needed to hear that because I was really discouraged. And I guarantee you this person didn't realize how much I needed to hear that. And yet it just, man, it was really cool just to see that ebb and flow. Like it was definitely felt like I was in the tension of a battle for my heart this last week for sure.
Oh, bless your heart.
But really interesting just to see how God did that. And then that's when I came across my best thing that I heard this week.
Oh, really? What was that?
I was talking with a good friend of mine and he used a phrase that I've never heard before. Holy indifference. And he kind of expanded on it and he said, Kyle, it's so there was this basically I was processing about licensure and whether or not I should continue on and get my licensure in the state of Nebraska and some different things. And it was a very emotionally charged conversation. Like there was just a lot that was going on in this conversation and we were talking about it and he gave me some feedback and as we were exploring it, he was like, Kyle, so what would it look like to be able to make this decision from holy indifference? And I was like, okay, what do you mean by that? And he's like, in a space where your identity and your value and your sense of safety are completely tied in the heart of the Father. And so then you can look at this decision without the baggage, without the other things, those other elements that you were placing on that decision, or basically placing on the fact that you're going to have your quote unquote license. And yet the, like, whether to get it or not, there was conversations about, am I going to be a disappointment? Am I a failure? Am I not going to have finances because I didn't make this decision? Like, all these different things came up as a result of that. And he's like, what if your rest and your experience of the love of the Father was in such a way that you could have a holy indifference about this decision and say, Lord, do I need it or do I not to continue on in what you want me to do? What would that be like? And that, man, that kind of hit me, because I'd never thought, you know, I'd never heard that phrase before. And yet, how many situations do we get into that there's more weight in it? There's like this, it's emotionally charged because we've been placing an unhealthy expectation or an unhealthy hope that was meant for us trusting in the Father and in our relationship in the Father for that source versus that whatever thing that we're holding. You know, for me, it was my professional licensure in the state, but it could be the next relationship that I'm, you know, a relationship that I'm in, or a job that I'm holding, or whatever it might be. But trying to decide, you know, how do I make this decision? How do I discern where God's taking me next? And yet realizing there was like this major emotional tension that was involved in it, because there was some heartstrings that were tied to that licensure that went beyond what I think God had ever intended for me to have in that. And so that's been an interesting phrase of the week that I've been mulling over this week. What are your thoughts when you hear that?
Yeah, I hate the term indifference. That sounds horrible. I love the concept of what you're saying. If you can,
yeah,
it's kind of a protection against that double-mindedness. So I really want what God wants, but I don't want to look bad if other people think I made the wrong choice. I want to do what God wants, but, you know, I need to maximize my income potential. I get that as a cure for, or at least wrestling with the double-mindedness so I can be single-hearted. Indifference just doesn't sound, I mean, I love the, you know, it's kind of like excruciatingly beautiful. It's kind of one of those things where you start there and you end up there and you go, wow. I love the concept behind it. I just got to be a better word than indifference. I don't know what it would be.
When I think of indifference, I think either way, Lord, I'm still in your life. Like either way, I'm okay. Whether I make this decision, or if you lead me this direction or this direction, it doesn't matter because I know that I'm safe and I'm valued and I'm at rest in you, period.
Yeah.
So it doesn't matter. Like there's this, like, you know, yes, it still may have an impact. Yes, there's still, but it doesn't have the weight. And so when I heard indifference, like, I was like, oh, interesting. Okay. Yeah. I could see, you know, it's, I'm still wrestling with it, but it resonated. And I was like, huh, okay, I can connect with that.
It'd be great to hold stuff before the Lord with that kind of freedom. You know, just, I don't care which way, I you know, that kind of indifference. And yet at the same time, I think it'd be important for us to also hear God saying, I don't care either. So choose one. You know, that whole pressure of everything's got to be the will of the Lord.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think there's space because God made us to be decision makers. There's lots of space in our life for God to say, I don't care. Go down that road or go down this road. I'm going to be with you either way. And I've got opportunities down that road and I've got opportunities down that road. So be creative. I want to live your life with you as part of not only us living our life with him, but he wants to live his life with us. So I like that. I like being here on the other side, because I think when we white knuckling too much about God, what do you really want here? And nothing's clear. It may be because God's saying, hey, do whichever's on your heart. I'm going with you.
Yeah. And it ties back into, you know, a couple of the conversations that we've been having over the last couple of weeks, right? Of that space where the Lord invites us into it and says, okay, what do you want to do? And as our desires, as those longings in our heart begin to align more with just the joy of the kingdom, and we learn how to play with the Father, it's like, ooh, yeah, like, what do you want to do, Kyle? Like, let's, you know, what's, and same stuff with like my daughter. Sometimes I'll sit down with her and I will direct the play. And other times I sit down and I said, okay, what do you want to play with to get today?
Yep.
You lead me into the experience that you want to have, and I just want to enjoy it with you. And I never understood that to the degree that I do now as being a dad and having my daughter invite me into things that she loves doing and vice versa. Both are equally enjoyable.
Goes along with the last line of that letter I wrote about just about letting the love of God just wash over our hearts, clear our minds, and leave the heavy lifting to Father.
Yeah.
Yeah, I love that.
So best thing you heard this week. You have one?
I had a phrase. You ever heard of the scandal of particularity?
The scandal of particularity.
In reference to God. Yeah, I hadn't either.
That is not a concept I'm
with. And professors said it in this Dante study that I've been involved in, the scandal of particularity. So I kind of researched a little bit. What is this? And he was even saying in the thing, this is something in Christian thought, the scandal of particularity. It's like, okay, so I Google that and it all takes me back to one quote from Annie Dillard, and she doesn't even define it there. But she says the Christ incarnation occurred improbably, ridiculously, at such and such a time, into such and such a place, is referred to with great sincerity, even among believers, as the scandal of particularity.
Hmm.
And the professor who was using it was talking about how love works that way. Love does not work from the abstract to the personal. Love works the other way. Love works from the personal to the abstract. So I think the scandal of particularity, like I've read a lot on this, but how it got my mind thinking was, man, so that Jesus comes 2,000 years ago in the land of Israel, lots of other people, lots of other places on the planet, he comes there. And I guess the scandal is, why there? Why that particular thing? Or how many people would have loved an afternoon with Jesus that the woman at the well got? The particularity of the way God's love works in the world. And part of what they were saying, who was referring to this term, is he saw more value in putting the life of Jesus in his life into 12, 15, 20 people around Galilee and Bethany, than he saw constantly going to multitudes who seemed to misunderstand what he said all the time. And I've been really thinking about this a ton. And I don't know if this is the way everyone else applies it, but you could take it all the way through, right? You got, why Abraham? Why this one guy in Ur? Yeah. And did he earn it in some way? Did he just have more faith than anybody else? Were there other people God visited in the history that we just don't have recorded? Because we have Abraham's story and the derivatives of that story. But obviously Melchizedek came from somewhere. Melchizedek was somebody that was Abraham's contemporary who knew the living God. But we don't know anything more about him than that. He just appears briefly in Abraham's story. So the particularity thing is God does what he does. And there's a particularity to it. There's a particular place and time. And it even goes back to the letter from my friend, I think, from back east, because we want God to appear to us the way we hear a great story, Lewis's story, and God as an angel, or a dream, or a vision, or an audible voice, as some people claim, and maybe they do, or die and go to heaven and come back, or whatever. And it's always like, well, why didn't you do that for me? I want to do that for me.
Yeah.
So I guess that's the scandal. The scandal is the way God does his stuff so individualized that it's difficult for us to hear other people's stories and not try to make them our own or get frustrated that he hasn't done that to me in the same way or in some way that's as exciting as that. Like just my trip to Nashville, go back to that. I mean, I had more fun spending, you know, an hour plus each morning with Nate on a 4-mile walk and exploring that. The particularity of that conversation is more valuable to me. And I know it for everybody else. I mean, the other wider conversations, we get into a lot of stuff and talk about stuff that's fun. I think people are touched by those things.
Yeah.
But not as much as the particularity of being with an individual or having a breakout at lunch and then being able to talk to people more individually. I mean, I've seen my life go from loving to be the guy on the stage, preaching the stuff, holding an audience in the palm of my hand and being able to manipulate in a not so generous term, but able to take them to the heights of glory or, you know, to evoke tears by telling an emotional story. I've gone from really loving what it was to command a stage. Almost not even interested in that. More interested in the particularity of where God wants me to be and with whom I am. And I have known at times, like I've gone someplace to be and there's lots of people around. But when I'm flying home, I'm saying, I think I was there for that person. And I was there for that one. But it always felt scandalous to give in to that. Like, you can't make money at this. You can't fly around the world and spend time with individuals. And, you know, Jesus shows up in Samaria and there's a woman at a well. So he takes all afternoon with her. And that gets him into another discussion that night with a mob of people that she knows. But I've been really sorting out what it means to embrace the particularity of love. That love really is love one another. It's one at a time. It's not, there's no way to pre-program or package this mass-producing idea of what it means to be a disciple. Jesus didn't do it. He didn't ask us to do it. And yet our whole idea of books and curriculums and seminars and workshops and, you know, three-year curriculums going to hear some man's wisdom about something so you can channel it into your thoughts. And yet I see people who do all that stuff sometimes really, really struggle if it doesn't connect them to God in a real way. Mm-hmm. And I kind of, man, that particularity has really, is this, did that give words to something that God's been doing in my life over the last 25 years or more?
I really resonate with that. There's two different conversations that I had this week that are coming to mind when I hear you talk about that. The first one is a conversation with a good friend of mine that is, I love him to death. He's an incredible man. He's a marketing genius. I mean, he's operating in the upper echelons of the marketing industry in the world. And so we were just talking about some things, and his comment was, Kyle, why would you solely focus or limit yourself to impacting one person at a time when you have the ability to impact hundreds, if not thousands, if not hundreds of thousands, if not millions, all at the same time? And we were talking about this a little bit and just kind of exploring that idea. And then literally like this morning, I was working with a client and we were talking about some life situations that they were going through. And they were referencing a story that of a person that they really looked up to. And this person was sharing their story and how they got to where they were. And this person's kind of living out the life that my client really wants to be able to live. And yet he was examining the elements of this person's story. And I was like, well, how do I do that? How do I manufacture that? How do I get there? How do I make that happen for me? And yet I feel like that's the beauty of the scandal, is that his story was meaningful to him because God was involved in it in such a way that was so specific to that person's heart. Like that's why it was so impactful to him. And for me and for you, like I think about the ways that God has moved in my life. And I've heard other people's stories and I've looked on at other people's lives and been like, man, that'd be really cool to be able to live a life like that, or to have that kind of day-to-day experience, right? And yet I think back and I'm like, man, Lord, those moments and those seasons of my life and those times that you and I have really had some beautiful encounters, no one else would get them. Like, even if I shared them with other people, yeah, they might sound awesome and people might be impacted by them or resonate with them, but there's no way they will be as meaningful to them as it was to my heart, because it was custom tailored for me. It was custom tailored for my life. I mean, literally, when he moves in those spaces, like he does it in such a way where it's bringing in every history thing, every pain or wound. Like, I mean, he just is bringing a level of detail and context and particularity that nobody else could do. And it's so meaningful. It's so impactful.
Yeah, and I wonder, is that part of when Jesus is talking about what is highly valued among men is despicable in the eyes of God or detestable?
Yeah.
That I understand that the humanity thing that thinks masses, crowds, mass production, I mean, everything in our world's gone that way, or, you know, influencer, social media, you know, building your brand and having this massive appeal where we're just putting out generalities in the world. And yet so many people who are part of that, read those books, been to those conferences, whatever, still wrestle with this inner sense of loneliness and lack of connection. What if that was only meant to be tutored? It's like trying to teach people to fly an airplane on a video. If you don't sit down in a plane with somebody who knows how to fly it, you're never going to learn to. And This is one of the things that's really changed me, because I've noticed through most of my life, I get requests for all kinds of things. You know, would you be my mentor? Would you be a counselor? Would you be this with that? And I'm going, you know, I can't. I'm a writer and a podcaster, and I'm out doing blah, 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 blah. And I enjoy doing those things. But I have in the last 10 years given more and more of my time to individuals. And even in the last week, I've made some decisions to be inside a difficult space with someone. And part of the negative thought in my mind is, you can't do this for everybody. And I have thought that nudging was God's until I ran into this thing about particularity. Now I'm going, oh, for Pete's sakes, could that have been the enemy?
Yeah.
Diluting the gift of God in my life by thrusting it at masses, thrusting it at nameless people out there somewhere who are going to be really touched by my writing. And people have been, or podcasts. Sure. And I get that God touches people through this. But these don't take near as much time. The real time is, would you give 6 months, an hour a week to somebody who needed to be coached into a reality that they're not going to find otherwise? Yeah. And then even talking about it with you, I get, you know, 14 other people going, well, can you do that for me, man? I've been wanting you to do that for me for a long time. And I go, I don't know how to do it. I know there's three people right now that God's asked me to walk through this with them. And I feel nudged into that reality. And that's maybe the scandal of particularity. Will there be others that God will nudge me towards? I hope so. Yeah, I think that's probably the way he meant, because I meant to put his life in the world, because I want to see people really catch it. I don't want to be the guy talking about it, and then people are going, I don't think that's real. I think Wayne just, you know, blows us all up for his own head, because I've never heard God. I don't know what God nudging me means. I don't know how to live in that life. Instead, I'd say, you know what, if I coached a dozen people into that reality versus talking to 10 million that didn't find it, what would be more valuable? And I saw I don't know that I've answered those questions. I think those have been rising in my heart. Because I do see God leaning me into that more and more. When I travel, I'm much more looking for the individual conversations than the meetings. Although the meetings have some impact, but even in the meetings, I'm looking to really help that person right there. I'm not looking to, okay, I'm going to teach something that's going to bless us all. Because if you don't help people make sense of their journey and how God interacts in their space and how to recognize his doings, then you really haven't served them well.
Yeah. And I feel like there's almost a seductive allure to you need to, like, man, I just resonate so deeply with that comment that you made about, you can't do this for everyone, or like the message that God, like, and not in a prideful way, but it's like, I want to be able to help as many people engage with this journey as I possibly can. And yet, is that the best mindset to have? Is that the right way to look at it? Or is it to say, Lord, is my impact going to be at a 3-inch depth, but it's going to spread over a lot of places? Or are we talking an 80-foot depth or 200-foot depth, but it can only be with, you know, a select number of people?
If you look at the way the kingdom works, or maybe this mustard seed, you know, that Jesus spends time with 15, 20 people. There's maybe 500 at the end of his life that knew about the resurrection that he appeared to. But then within 20, 30 years, it is spread all over the known world.
Yeah.
Not by speakers and book writers and that, but transformed lives, transforming lives, transforming lives, transforming lives. And the propagation of a real gospel in the world, rather than paying for a Billy Graham or someone to be on a stage and do it for the masses who got saved, filled out the workbooks, and yet never made the connection with God that's transformative. And so that's where I'm at. I know the one. I know we lean toward the one because, it's crass, but it's the business model.
Totally. Absolutely.
Yeah, you can't make money selling a book to 5 people or having conversations with 10. You really can't. I mean, if you don't trust God for his provision, then you're going to go on, business model doesn't work that way, which I think is why we've gotten churches the way we have. We've gotten pastors who are evidently, most of them went into it to really help people who are hurting find freedom in the life of Jesus, then end up managing an institution and teaching on a Sunday morning. That, and even that teaching has a lack of particularity to it, because it's just something on the pastor's heart rather than I'm engaged with someone and inside, and now Jesus, give me some wisdom that's going to open a door for them to see how your wisdom, it's like teaching people to fish rather than giving them a fish, the old adage.
Just reflecting back on the life of Jesus, you know, there was an ebb and flow, and it'd be really interesting, I guess, to explore this more, because he engaged people at every venue size, right? He engaged thousands. He engaged a couple hundred. He engaged 50. He engaged 12. He engaged one. So it'd be really intriguing to see, Lord, what was the ratio? Like, is there a ratio, or like, is there, and I'm sure he'd be like, Kyle, seriously, like, like, are you really going after a ratio of a relational ratio of how much time you spend doing each one versus.
Yeah, it doesn't sound wise.
I feel like the Father just, he was open to what the Father was saying, and he was open to what, where the Father was moving. And sometimes it was in a group of 5,000, and sometimes it was in a single conversation with a person at the well. I think that was that relational openness of just looking and asking. Because would you say, like, for example, when he did like the feeding of the 5,000, was there particularity there?
Well, they're all gone the next day. That's what I look at.
Yeah.
They were there for free food. They didn't get him. They got some food, maybe some wisdom, and they were excited about it. And I think somehow Jesus had in mind, yeah, I'm doing what the Father shows me. I'm leaning into that space with him. But I think he had a passion for what's most fruitful. So it's not, and not seeing fruitful as scale. Fruitful is, well, I talked to 5,000. That's more important than the one I talked to at a well. Maybe not. Maybe he ends up with 12 at the end of that. 5,000 came, got some free food. He got to share some stuff, planted seeds. Maybe they bear fruit later. I'm not against any kind of crowd speaking. I just don't want to spend much of my life there. And now since it's, you know, I started making biscuits, everybody's asking me to make biscuits. Now I start talking about my 4-mile walk. I go anywhere and people go, can I go for a walk with you tomorrow? And I'm going, I would love it. A walk goes so fast when you're in a conversation.
Oh, absolutely.
And it's so slow when you're doing anything else. Even if you got a good podcast, you like it still, like, this is never going to end. And I just have found God leaning. And then to think that God does that, the particularity, that's what I want people to understand. The particularity with which God wants to address your life will not fit into anybody else's box that they're selling that you're going to a seminar to learn.
No.
So the particularity of how God makes himself known to me is where I want people thinking and praying and going, okay, God, what are you showing me today? Oh, I want to have dreams like that guy. Well, no, God, I want you to have access to me however you want to. That's that bride says, come however you want to come to me today. Show me whatever you want to show me today, and learn to live at the pace of that relationship rather than the achievement things that we, and I'm writing a new book right now. So it's not like I'm abandoning that side of my life. But I think the value in processing someone's journey is so much better than just being able to give them a book. And I've nagged with all my life that saying, can I do that for everybody? So you don't do it for anybody. Or like, you know, world hunger, same thing. I can't feed the world. I can't. You could feed the next one you meet. You know, you could have an impact like in Kenya or somewhere that God puts on your heart. So the scandal of particularity, because I get emails all the time from India and Pakistan and other places in Africa saying, oh my gosh, we see what you did in Kenya. Can you help us with the same thing? And I'm going, you know what? That was a very particular thing God asked us to do.
Yeah.
And it would have diluted it to try and do it for all of world hunger through live streaming the God journey. It would have been crazy. But there was enough to do it where Jesus asked us to do it in astounding proportions. And if other people are living in that scandal of particularity, then God's work unfolds in the world in a beautiful way.
Thank you for traveling with us today on the God journey. You can join this conversation by visiting thegodjourney.com.